Hello, this is KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM on your radio dial. Or if you're in a digital zone, go to kptz.org. You can listen to today's show live, but you can also sample some of the earlier episodes of Our Town, which are online as podcasts. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is available as podcasts. You know, double your listening pleasure. Hear today's show as well as some of the earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who are the people down at the Maritime Center fingering the new sweatshirts and t-shirts for the Wooden Boat Festival? Michael Hale did a fabulous job painting the scene for the 40th anniversary of the festival, but who are the people buying the shirts? Are they locals or are they tourists? And who is that guy on the recumbent bike who is clearly going faster than Port Townsend's 25-mile-per-hour speed limit? Do the cops ticket him? And who's the waitress at CJ's who seems to be handling 12 plates at once? Does she ever drop any? This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk with people who make up the eclectic mix around here. We talk about their lives, their dreams, how they ended up on the western edge of the continent. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, locksmiths and ladies who lunch, bus drivers and teenage beauty queens. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, otters, and the soaring eagles. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of Port Townsend's authentic and even eclectic people, your neighbors, your friends, and particularly the people you don't know yet, but you'd like to meet them. Today's guest is Sheriff Dave Stanko, who won election in 2014 after a very messy battle. He was a political rookie and didn't have the backing of the Democratic Party, or come to think of it, he didn't have the backing of the Republican Party either. Of course, it wasn't quite the level of drama and hysteria as the current presidential battle, and I can vouch for the fact that he has a much nicer hairstyle than Donald Trump. But Sheriff Stanko faced an uphill battle to win his current four-year term. I had him on the show in January 2015, shortly after he began his term. When we met then, we talked about his plans for the position. Today, we're here to talk about how he sees the situation 18 months into his term. But let's start with a little bit of background. I know from our previous interview that you didn't grow up here in the Pacific Northwest. Briefly, what's your background?
Marianne, thank you. Kind words. My hair is not like Donald Trump's. You're right. Thank you very much for that. Well, my wife and I actually raised our family in Orange, California. And my law enforcement career started in around 1975-ish with the Orange County Sheriff's Office, where I spent about a year working in their jail, a very large jail. And then from there, I found out that I would have to spend 5 years in the jail, which I really didn't want to do. I wanted to be a street cop. So I applied at Fullerton PD, and I spent the next 28 years there with a very successful long career from my perspective, and I retired in 2004 as a lieutenant.
Okay, what were a few of the varied things you did when you were a cop in Fullerton?
You know, as I get older, the memory does dim a little bit, so some of the stories, forgive me, may be embellished just a little bit, but not
a lot. It happens.
But some of the favorite things I did, I was a canine handler for a couple of years. I had a dog named Nikki, who was a Schutzen III trained canine shepherd out of Germany. And he was trained in narcotics as well as a search dog and a protection dog. He was trained in the, what they call the guard and bark theory, which is when the bad guy runs and if he stops, the dog will not bite him, but just stand there and guard him. But then if the suspect runs again, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I see. How big was this dog? How much did he weigh?
Well, he was a big dog. He was a big shepherd. Like human beings, all shepherds have a different personality. And this one was aggressive. He was a tough dog to handle. He was about 100 pounds, which is big for a shepherd.
Yeah.
Because these dogs are under a lot of stress when they work. In Fullerton, our dogs worked at night. They worked from 4 in the evening till 4 in the morning, and they're in the car all the time, barking and running around unless we need them to come out.
Right. And did you do any undercover work?
I did. Thanks for asking. Early in my career, in the late 70s, early 80s, during the Miami Vice kind of time, I actually played that Miami Vice for a very short period of time.
Did you wear pink and turquoise?
Not quite like a TV show. I did, for a while, have the long hair, and I mingled with some of the folks buying street drugs. And then for one big case, I actually represented myself as a business person looking to buy large quantities of drugs. In this case, it happened to be cocaine. So I ran into an informant who I developed, and one thing led to another, and we ended up flying to Florida. And I bought 5 kilos of cocaine and arrested 5 people from a very large cartel at that time, whose name will remain anonymous.
Yes, I think that's wise.
It is wise from my perspective.
Okay, so you retired from Fullerton in 2004.
Correct.
How did you end up here in the Pacific Northwest?
Well, my wife Lynn is a Washingtonian. She was born in Okanagan, and her mother went to Omak High School. Her dad went to Okanagan High School, and they were high school sweethearts, and Lynn spent her first 12 years in Washington. Her father moved the business down to Southern California, where we met. In fact, we met at Disneyland. We both worked there as ride operators. Yeah, another little tangent there, Marianne.
Yes.
But fast forward to today, 2004, Lynn's parents, before they retired, wanted to move back to Washington. So they moved up to Port Townsend, and they bought a home in Cape George. And Lynn and I had visited several times. In 1989, we bought our first piece of property up here, just as an investment piece of property. And we've owned that since 1989. And it's the same property that we built our current home on.
Okay. So you moved up here, in theory, to retire.
That is correct. And I was up here retired for 10-plus years, minding my own business.
Well, you were doing a few things during that period of time.
I was, and as my pastor calls me, I have a restless spirit from that perspective. And I also have a passion for the community, not only up here, but down in Southern California. Southern California, I was involved with the Rotary Club, and I was on the board of the Boys and Girls Club down there. I really have a passion for the involvement of kids and trying to find a solution for domestic violence with families and so forth. So when I came up here, I got involved again in Rotary. I've been involved with the Rotary Clubs for over 25 years, Port Townsend Rotary. And I also got involved in the Jumping Mouse Board and a couple of other boards here. I'm currently, by the way, on the Dove House Board and still maintain my Rotary membership. But I find it, from my perspective, my human perspective, to give back to the community. You need to stay engaged.
Well, I also know, I just want to make note for our listeners, that you were Citizen of the Year in 2011. Is that correct?
I was.
That's great. So you were, you know, a busy boy, really. So
I was.
What prompted you to decide to run for office?
Well, I was minding my own business, sitting at home with my wife. And that's the story I'll stick to anyway.
Right, okay.
And I was asked by some community leaders if I would consider running for sheriff. So I said that I would. And before I ran, I actually approached the Democratic Party here and asked them, I told them I would run as a Democrat if they would support me. Because I sincerely believe, as we talked earlier today, that I think the sheriff should be an independent position. I think that the office of sheriff and other, my personal opinion is that we have to look at everything from a neutral lens. And I didn't feel I could do that if I was actually a party person. But fast forward to the election, I went to the Democratic nominating meeting, and they did not endorse me. They endorsed one of my opponents, which is fine. So I chose to back out of the election, which I did. My wife and I went back home, minding our own business. And 2 or 3 weeks later, I was asked again by the community if I would consider getting back in the race. So I talked to my wife, and we did. Huh. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Right. But your name was already on the ballot, right? So technically, you even if you had announced you withdrew, you were still on there, but you didn't campaign or anything till you officially decided, I'm back in, right?
That is correct. My name was on the ballot as a Democrat. It could not be removed. I wanted to remove it and run as an independent, but it was too late to do that. But every forum that I went to and every debate that I went to and every coffee clutch that I went to, I announced that I was an independent candidate.
All right. Okay. Well, before we go sort of through what you've done so far during your term, let's talk a little bit about the scope of the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department. I don't think most of our listeners really know how big a job it is, how big the area is. Can you just give us a nutshell view of it?
Sure. I think it's really important that the people of Jefferson County and of Port Townsend, since that is included in Jefferson County, really understand the scope of the county. It's a huge county. We have over 1,800 square miles, which includes the Olympic National Forest, way out to the west end in Clearwater and Claylock. That also includes most people don't know that we actually have a Department of Corrections facility out there with 400 male inmates.
I didn't know that.
It's called Olympic Correction Center. There's 400 inmates out there, and most of them are on their last part of their sentence before they're released. So they have to have 2 or 3 years left only, and they're there, and then they're released from there. So we actually have that in our responsibility also. And then we also are responsible for 300 miles of waterway. We have 3 boats. We have deputies that are trained on the waterways. Captain Mike Stringer is in charge of that. We have a cadre of volunteers that volunteered 4,000 hours just last year. They're run by Dan Holleran, who's our volunteer coordinator, does a great job with the volunteers. And I'll make a little advertisement here. Anybody that's interested in becoming a volunteer, would love to have you consider the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office. But we have 50 employees spread out between corrections, our jail. We have a 57-bed jail.
Now, it's the only jail in Jefferson County, right?
That is correct.
So whether you commit a crime in Hadlock or Port Townsend or wherever, you're going to the jail.
Or the West End. That is correct.
The West End, okay.
We also have a patrol division with 13 patrol deputies plus 4 supervisors. We have a civil division at the courthouse where we're in charge of Superior Court security. We also assist Judge Landis with security there, and we're in charge of all civil paperwork servings. And we also have a admin staff of about 4 people.
Okay. You know, I do read the, you know, sheriff's log in the newspaper, but can you just sort of characterize what the majority of types of crimes are that you're confronting?
Most crimes that we confront are no different than L.A., San Francisco, or Seattle. It's just that, as we discussed earlier today, we have less of them because we have less people. We have a 31,000 population here, so we also have a unique demographics. We are mainly a Caucasian community here with a smattering of Hispanics and other folks. But crimes mainly are domestic violence related, neighborhood dispute related, drug related. We do have a lot of calls regarding methamphetamine use and occasionally on heroin use and opiate abuse use. So we get involved with that. And there is a rise in the heroin market here in the state of Washington. It has really impacted Clallam County more than Jefferson County, but it's still coming our way from that perspective.
Now, one thing you told me really surprised me, which is that there's approximately a 70% recidivism rate.
That's correct. In our jail facility, we have an average of, we have a 57-bed capacity, and we have an average of 47 souls, male and female, in jail at any given time. And out of that, 60 to 70% are recidivists. They are what we call frequent flyers. They're in and out of jail. So the challenge we have is to find a continuum of care for this part of our population so they can enter our population as contributing citizens again. And the cadre of the 70% have a drug use, alcohol use, or mental use, or a combination of problems. So we work with Jefferson Mental Health, Jefferson Healthcare, and we have contract medical people that come into our jail to assist the assessment and the treatment of these people.
Okay. Now, the last time you were on my show was January 2015. You'd just taken over as sheriff. You outlined some of your plans then. One of the key things you talked about was getting more community involvement with the sheriff's department. Can you give me a little update? How's that going?
Thanks for asking. That's one of my proudest moments. We're really involved in the community now. I really think that from a new policing perspective, community policing perspective, the new perspectives in policing, getting involved in the community really is the key to reducing crime in any neighborhood. I have deputies now that are involved in the Kiwanis Club, the Rotary Club. We're a member of the Chamber of Commerce now. We have a deputy on the drug court, on the mental health court. In fact, we have a new star in our making, too. I know it's the same day the show airs, but on June 7th, we have a show called Dark Woods Justice on the Discovery Channel, starring Deputy Adam Newman and Sergeant Mark Applin. So I'm very, very proud of that. I won't take any credit other than just allowing them to do it.
Okay, well, just, you know, since you brought it up, you got to at least give us a little capsule of the plot line. What is the Darkwood Justice?
Well, Darkwood Justice, obviously, is theatrical, is dramatic. Yes. But we do have a problem here in not only Jefferson County, but surrounding counties, Mason County, Grays Harbor, and Clallam County, with our remote Olympic National Forest and other forest areas, there's a huge market for maple theft. They, the bad guys, sell the maple to people that make guitars, other musical instruments, and it's, I believe it's called the cloud maple. That is very, very exotic and very, very expensive.
How much can you get for one of these trees?
Well, one of the people that we caught for maple theft said that he can get $45,000 to $50,000 for a tree.
That's incredible.
It is incredible.
That's incredible.
So it's worth the risk from their perspective.
Well, I've got a warped perspective, but that's a different point.
I agree.
Okay, you're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend. The show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Each segment of the show, I interview someone from the community. Today's guest is Sheriff Dave Stanko, who's made some changes in the Sheriff's Department since he took over in January 2015. One of the background documents that you gave me, which I looked at, was that the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners issued a proclamation called the Stepping Up Initiative to reduce the number of people with mental illnesses in jail. It noted, among other things, that jails are now the substitute for psychiatric hospitals in our country. What has your department been trying to do to address this?
Well, we are working in partnership with Jefferson Mental Health, with the commissioners here in Jefferson County, and Jefferson Healthcare to try to find solutions to this problem. The brick-and-mortar mental health institutions really no longer exist to the quantity they were a few decades ago. The move nationwide is to reduce the number of mental health folks and to work on the continuum of care that I mentioned earlier. And that can only be done with proper analysis when the people are in our jail and then continuing the care outside of our care so we can reduce that frequent flyer like I talked about earlier. But the commissioners are intimately aware of it. Jefferson Mental Health and Jefferson Healthcare and the Sheriff's Office are all trying to work in a partnership to get this done.
Okay. Another thing you shared with me earlier is a paper from Harvard. It's titled, From Warriors to Guardians, Recommitting American Police Culture to Democratic Ideals. Can you walk me through that a bit?
I can. I think it's a way of the future for police departments. Community policing has been around since the 70s, actually earlier than that, from the Sir Robert Peel days in England. But community policing in the 70s was the broken window theory. If you can fix up your neighborhoods and if you can make your neighborhoods look clean, you would have less crime. And we fast forward now, we've gone through the Vietnam War, we've gone through 2011, we've gone through this tremendous military buildup, this tremendous military presence, and not only the academians, but police chiefs and sheriffs, not only in Washington, but nationwide, realize that that's not the solution to reducing crime. The solution to reducing crime is to get your officers out of their car and involved in the community. Communication is 98% of what we do.
Well, you know, there have been violent confrontations between police and communities in other parts of the country in the last year or two. And, you know, when I watch TV, sometimes I see the cops in these, you know, armored vehicles, and they come out and they're armed to the teeth and they're wearing all this pretty scary looking stuff. Is that something that we're going to see disappearing, or is that?
You know, Marianne, that'll never disappear. However, like I just alluded to in the last statement, 98% of the policeman's job is to, or police officer's job is to engage the community. We will always have that 2% of our job to take care of the violence. That's why we wear guns and sticks and we carry mace and tasers and so forth. But our officers have to be trained in, and they are trained in, not only the use of those weapons, but also the de-escalation of situations, critical incident training, knowing how to recognize schizophrenia, knowing how to recognize bipolar, a domestic or a diabetic coma versus a drunk driving incident. As an example, when I first got here regarding military equipment, we had a Hummer. And I immediately got rid of the Hummer and replaced it with a 1951 Ford police car that I now drive in parades and I hand out candy.
I saw you
kids
at the roadie parade. I saw you handing out candy, but you didn't give me any.
That's right. Watch out for the old guy. The old sheriff's going to be out there handing out candy. Not throwing candy, by the way, but handing candy out to the kids. Because the perception I want to build with our young people, which is our future, is that police officers, deputies are approachable. We need to be approachable. We need to be engaged in the community. Because I believe, and I sincerely have a passion for knowing that if we have a problem, if we, God forbid, we get into a shooting, our public will embrace us if they know us. If they don't know us, they can't embrace us. So I want our public to know us.
Okay, well, in the Harvard study, one of the things they talked about was that up to 2012, when police forces in Washington State were trained, there was a boot camp mentality. And it was very rigid and a lot of allusions to police getting shot. And starting in 2012, the thinking started changing. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I can. Thanks for asking the question. Sue Rohr, who is our academy executive, she was the former sheriff of King County. And she got there and made some observations. She looked at all the millennials that were now training, and they're all on their iPads. They're all on their phones. They're texting. They don't communicate like you and I are. Looking eyeball to eyeball and trying to talk to people, reading body language. So she said, wait a minute. You know, there's a time and a place for discipline, a time and a place for obedience, but there's also a time and a place for understanding and communication. There's still a component of physical fitness, of defensive tactics, of firearms, because that is, like I mentioned earlier, a part of our job.
Right.
But there's also a larger part of communication. The instructors now, when you walk by a student, instead of the student bracing against the wall and saying, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, it's good morning, ma'am, how are you, ma'am, how's your day going, trying to develop conversation, because she found out early on that the communication skills of our young millennials were lacking, unless they were talking on their cell phones or texting. But that was one of the reasons behind that.
Huh.
This was also a movement by President Obama. And Sue Rohr was picked to be on his committee, nationwide committee, that put this particular paper together.
Wow. Well, one line struck me in the paper, and this is a quote. It turns out that people don't care as much about crime rates as they do about how they are treated by the police.
I agree 100%. Crime rates to most people are not important. What's important is for you to feel safe, for you to feel protected, for you to feel you can reach out and talk to your police officer. So that's why I encourage our men and women in uniform, our corrections people too, by the way, to get out of their cars, talk to people, knock on your door, go into businesses and say hi. And that's one reason why I do Coffee with the Cop. We've had Coffee with the Cop here in the community on several locations, at the Jefferson County Library, at Tawana's Cafe in Quilcene. We've had it at the Chimicum Cafe. We've had it at Port Ludlow, and I'm going to carry it to other parts of the county about, you know, three or four times a year.
And you're also reaching out to the schools as well.
We are. Thank you. We had an experiment where we had a high school resource officer actually in on the campuses. Deputy Charlie McCarty was on the campuses last fall. He was on Chimicum, Quilcene, and Brandon whenever time would permit. And we're actually trying to get a COPS grant now. That's the acronym, COPS grant, to try to get some federal money to help us hire a high school resource officer. In fact, I'd like to reach out to the community that I'm looking for any solution that we can find to assist that. We're reaching out to the school districts, and of course the county will have to also assist in funding that particular police officer. But that's one thing the community wants. They want to see more deputies on campus, not just on campus when there's a problem, but on campus just to be available for kids to talk to.
You know, we're running short on time, but mm-hmm. I wanted to just get in something else. You also had an outside panel do a report studying the department and making suggestions. There's no way we can get through, really, their suggestions. But first, just tell me what exactly was entailed there.
A little little politics here. That was one of my campaign promises, is as a new executive, you just can't come in and try to do things without understanding the organization. I had a community policing assessment. I also had a LEMAP assessment, which is from all the sheriffs and police chiefs here in Washington State. They have a professional analysis of your organization to analyze operationals, best practices, and so forth. So they came in and did a report. It's going to take me about 18 months to 24 months to initiate those recommendations, but that will lead itself to accreditation here in Washington State. We'll be recognized as the best practice professional organization. So I'm looking forward to that, and that's one of my campaign promises that I'm going to follow through with.
Okay, great. Well, there were two things that caught my eye in there, and we don't really have time to talk about them this time, but I noted that one of the suggestions was that there be more female officers, particularly out on the street.
Ouch, that hurts.
And another one was we have a fairly large senior population here, and they just sort of raised the question, how can you more effectively utilize that as a resource?
Quickly, I am trying to recruit female officers. I have had no female applicants. I would love to have female applicants apply for the sheriff's office. A little advertisement there.
Okay,
please.
Okay, ladies, second, hear that.
And secondly, our volunteer cadre are in our Sheriff's Foundation and Citizen Advisory Board are looking to put together some type of a training for seniors.
Okay.
Soon to come out.
Okay. Well, in closing, Sheriff Stanko, I know your current term doesn't expire till the end of 2018, and however, you are allowed to run for another term. Can you give us a preview at what's your plan?
I do plan on running. I do plan on implementing and carrying out everything that I talked about, not only in the election, but that I've started here now. And I'm actually excited and looking forward to serving the community for an additional 4 years.
Okay, but you're going to run as an independent this time, right?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for joining us, Sheriff Stanko. You're listening to Our Town on KPTZ 91.9 FM. The show is called Our Town. I'm Marianne McNellis, the host. This show profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. My guest today has been Sheriff Dave Stanko, a man who's working to make sure Jefferson County stays the paradise that it is. Stay tuned to KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, for more dynamic, eclectic community programming.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.